Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap. Steals and deals in retail, from Go Private talks at Nordstrom to opening the books at Macy's to a t-shirt giant possibly up for sale. We'll talk matchmaking and the state of the consumer coming up. Plus, dip and rip. Shares of NVIDIA starting the day deep in the red before rebounding. This the day after announcing its new Blackwell AI chips in front of a packed house. We'll break down the semi-trade from here. And later, Bitcoin's bad week. What is behind the crypto crumble? A bounce back for the builders inside today's strong housing data, and emojis, what they can tell you about how retail investors are feeling right now. We will explain. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Steve Grasso, Karen Feinerman, Dan Athan, and Guy Adami. Market staging a turnaround late in the day with all three indices ending squarely in the green. The S&P rising 0.6%, setting a new record close. The Dow adding 320 points and the Nasdaq down nearly 1% at its lows, finishing the day up 0.4%. We'll get to that in just a minute. But first, new signs that the retail sector is ripe for some deal making. Shares of Nordstrom popping more than 9% after reports that its founding family is looking to take the company private. This news coming after similar attempts 6 years ago was ultimately unsuccessful, but it's far from the only deal percolating this consumer space. Macy's saying it has agreed to open its books to potential acquirers, Arkhouse and Brigade Capital. Both it and Kohl's have attracted activist interest in recent weeks. There's also Tapestry's $8.5 billion deal for Capri, which is expected to close later this year. And just this afternoon, shares of American apparel giant Gildan Activewear popped after the board said it has several potential buyers for the company. So is this just the start of a coming wave of M&A activity in the retail space? Karen, what do you think?
Well, it's very surprising. It's a ton of activity. It's like, you know, Pachinko, which is a game probably before your time. But Guy played it a lot.
Sam Strada.
Right. So the Nordstrom to me is sort of the most interesting and actually the least likely. It's sort of the idea of a family raising debt to buy out the company. And I think at one time maybe there was a real estate aspect of it. So many of those pieces aren't really in vogue anymore. Maybe they should be, but certainly the cost of capital of doing a deal has gone up tremendously. So that one, and you don't want to be an indebted retailer trying to compete in this world. So that one is a little harder to fathom. I could see maybe a merger with another company. Right. That may be, that's in the same business where there's some synergies there. Similar in the Macy's situation, which it's interesting to me how this is evolving. I do think that here's a chance now for Brigade Arcade to show they're serious and that they do really have financing. And they've said, if you can show us your books and we think there's more value there, so we could see a deal worth more than 24, which is their current bid. Or it's not a bid. This is our level. It's not an actual formal bid. So that's sort of interesting. The Gildanware story is a really odd one, where the CEO was thrown out last year for not doing enough, not really being a CEO, apparently. That's sort of interesting, but I believe that was a decent chance that gets sold. It's cheap. But this whole space was so cheap. So that's not surprising that now there's interest.
That's exactly right. The whole space has been cheap. And I think what this tells you is the market is saying, you know what, maybe it's a bit of an all clear sign. We're through COVID. The recession that everybody's talking about is not coming. The valuations make sense. We can wrap our head around the business models. Now's the time to sort of act. And maybe that's going to be exactly true. And, you know, some of these stocks were parabolic moves. I mean, pull up Abercrombie and Fitch real quick, ANF. You look at this stock and you'd be like, oh, my God, this is a parabolic move. We've seen this in technology stocks. It has to be expensive. You know what? Even despite the move we've seen, it's still actually a very reasonable valuation for some of these names. So you can understand why people are getting their arms around them. I still think, you know, we'll talk about Macy's in a second. That probably sort of levitates up to that 24.5, 25 level. The one that sticks out to me, though, continues to be Home Depot. And we could pull up a chart. Bit of a double bottom. We flagged that a couple months ago. I don't know if it makes that prior all-time high, but this is one that probably continues to grind.
You're probably watching Capri.
I was watching Capri. I'm out of Capri. I sold it around $50 because if you look at it on a chart, it just really hasn't performed the way It bounced that first day when it was announced, or I should say as soon as it was announced. Really didn't hold price, kind of fell in a precipitous fashion. Sold that. I sold my Tapestry. $48 for Tapestry, $50 for Capri. And as soon as we were doing this, I knew Guy was going to bring up Abercrombie. Abercrombie is up, and Guy's talked about this a lot. It's up 400% on a one-year performance.
It was better than NVIDIA last year.
Yeah.
But if you look at American Eagle, same type of thing. That chart is smooth, easy, up 84%. So it's funny the things that are gaining in the retail space that it's not really the department stores. So Macy's has that 24 bid. It's not bid. You said 6.6 billion is what they're willing to pay. Are they willing? And I saw the interview when they originally said maybe a couple of weeks ago slash months. What would you be willing to pay? So I'm not going to bid against myself, but a considerable amount more. So Macy's still in play for another couple of bucks to the upside.
I feel like retail is a space that you've once poo-pooed, Dan, saying that, you know, the consumer's going to fall out of bed when unemployment goes higher, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Maybe
it's all blah, blah, blah.
The worst.
Well, it's interesting. I think we spent a lot of time talking about Dick's last week, right? Uh-huh. And so we saw that move to the upside when that stock blew out to an all-time high after good results. And then, you know, we've seen Foot Locker in the last couple of weeks. We're going to get Nike in a couple of days. So I think for every Dick's, you know what I mean? And you know what I'm talking about, Steve.
Yep.
There is a Foot Locker, right? And so, like, so that's why I'm really interested.
If I had a dime for every time I've heard that.
No, I know. But, like, so my point is, like, I want to hear what Chewy has to say about online sales. I want to hear how Nike is navigating the kind of geopolitical environment, that sort of thing. I want to hear about the breakdown between online and stores and that sort of stuff. But again, I think a lot of this stuff kind of seems kind of one-off. Look at a Costco. We have Walmart at all-time highs. Costco didn't see an uptick for a week after it reported its earnings. So I guess my point is, it's like, it's easy to poo-poo a lot of this stuff, but I think it is getting a bit more stock specific. And then you start throwing in the potential for M&A, and that changes the game because some of the dogs end up becoming darlings.
Yep.
Well, interesting. Tomorrow morning, I think we'll see Signet Jewelry, which had a very difficult pandemic because nobody was getting engaged.
Right.
And it takes a couple years of dating before you get engaged. So they're still trying to work through that. Apparently, this is how it works. So that stock, it's not expensive on a PE basis, 10% short interest. That, if they come up with decent numbers, that could really pop tomorrow. I don't know.
They should be coming back to pre-pandemic levels. But at this point, if you do the two-year sort of delay. And,
yes, yeah. I think their inflection point is upon us.
Yeah. It's interesting. Dick's Sporting Goods comes out DKS. I mean, you would think, again, pull up a chart and look at the movie, be like, oh, my God, it's got to be expensive. Actually, no. It trades at less than 15 times earnings, probably has, I don't know, 11% or so EPS growth. Just came off after the quarter, I think on March 15th. A bevy of analysts raised their price target. I think the average price target now, according to FactSet, is 211 and a quarter, and they're probably too cheap. So what I think you're going to see over the next couple weeks or so are analysts that will continue to sort of chase the move to the upside in a name like
this. And seasonality, you're going into their sweet spot with a lot of sports
summer
coming back out.
Yep. Let's get more on the outlook for M&A and retail with former Toys R Us CEO Gerald Storch. Jerry, great to have you with us. What do you think is in the air at this point in the business cycle that is creating the stir in retail M&A?
Well, it's not at all unusual when you have troubled businesses or sectors to look at different solutions. If you were the Nordstrom family, I'm not surprised at all they're looking at something different. Basically, their stock has been marooned at the same level for over 20 years. And they made an offer before. It was rejected by the board. It's kind of tough when you're inside. You know, you need the board to approve it and all kinds of things when you go private transaction. But what they're doing clearly isn't working, particularly for department stores. And so there are obvious parallels between the Nordstrom situation and the Macy's ones. In both cases, they're looking to see, can we take this private? Because when we're private, maybe we can run it differently and do things that are more revolutionary in terms of the business model, you know, because you can make changes outside the public eye without that kind of glare of having to make every quarter. And so they have in common this notion that being private might be a better way to run it.
It's Karen. Thanks for being on. The history of retail is sort of littered with leverage buyouts that didn't work. And so what do you think the new model is, given where rates are? How much equity do you think you need to have to be able to do a deal where the company isn't burdened by too much debt?
Well, I think the first deals done in retail were done at higher leverage ratios. You look back, I saw a study recently. It's very clear that was true. There was a sense these retail companies were cash machines. and could keep spinning off that cash. But then you had, you know, competition from the internet, for example, e-commerce and Amazon, and need to invest in this whole new platform on top of everything that you had in front of you. And you had rising competition in the case of the department stores from the off-price retailers like TJ Maxx and Ross Stores or Burlington. So people recognize that. And so the new leverage that that would be applied to these companies, I would believe, would be less than what you saw in the early private equity deals. So people have gotten smarter as they've seen the history of what's going on here.
So, Jerry, just a sort of a on the side of Karen's question there, what do I make of this environment right now as far as retail? Is it, to Dan's point, stock pickers, which we could all agree with? What do we see in the environment? What's the landscape right now in the cycle of retail companies?
Look, there are clear winners and losers. That's what's going on. You say stock pickers. I mean, some companies are doing well. The consumer is clearly getting stretched. The most recent retail sales reports last 2 months in a row clearly were not good, no matter what you want to say about what happened last fall or didn't happen last fall. It hasn't been so good lately. But companies like Walmart or TJX or Costco or Amazon have done well regardless. And consumers are flocking to the to those names. And you mentioned Five Below tomorrow. I would expect similar kind of results out of them. There has been very little change, by the way, in who these winners and losers are. If you go back and look at what happened in the third quarter of last year compared to the fourth quarter, almost every retailer that posted negative same-store sales in the third quarter posted very similar, by the way, negative same-store sales in the fourth quarter. Same thing as you look at companies that were positive, again, like the Walmart, TJX's, very similar numbers. They didn't even change very much. So Walmart was up 4.9% same-store sales in the third quarter, up 4% in the fourth quarter. The stocks may bounce around on the earnings days because expectations have been set for differential performance. But then what you see is they're doing the same thing they did before. You know, in the case of the department stores, they were pretty steeply negative in the third quarter, and they're still negative in the fourth quarter, and the outlooks aren't very good. Similar for a company like Target, you know, which has historically been a great performer. They were negative 4.9 same-store sales in the third quarter, negative 4.4 in the fourth quarter, while Walmart was up 4.9 and 4. So, you know, that gap is one of the highest in history. So the winners are clearly winning, and the losers clearly aren't doing so well. You know, if you want any single metric in retail, look at same-store sales. That's going to tell you what's going to happen over any meaningful long cycle.
When you think about the retail landscape, Jerry, which retailer do you think gets taken out? What's top on your list?
I heard you might take it out. By the way, I want to be public about the fact I'm actually on the slate for Arkhouser Brigade, you know, of directors have nominated for Macy's. So, you know, obviously, I think that's a real situation or I wouldn't be involved in that situation. Mm-hmm. So the department stores have been struggling for a very long time. We're talking decades. And it's clear that what they're doing is not working. You know, every so often, oh, we're re-merchandising and reinventing the store. We're cutting expenses. We're closing more stores. And all that's done is give market share to the off-price players, to the discount stores, to the Amazons of the world, to the specialty players. Look at this. Look at this. You've got, you talk about it. Nordstrom's worth about $3 billion equity cap. Kohl's, $3 billion. Macy's, $6 billion. Dillard's, the best one, $7 billion. The total department store sector has equity cap of $19 billion. Meanwhile, TJ Maxx is worth $112 billion on their own. Ross Stores, $49 billion. Burlington, $14 billion. $175 billion market value for the off-pricers compared to $19 for the department stores. If you remember the old old saying, why pay department store prices, that was the TJ Maxx slogan for years and years and years in their advertising. I think the question now is, you know, why pay prices for the stocks of department stores in today's world? Clearly, they have, you know, lost tremendous value to these other sectors. That did not, without even getting to discount stores, Walmart and Target's growth, or to Costco, or to the e-commerce. The world has shifted mightily during this period, and we need to see some kind of a change.
I guess the storage portfolio has no department stores in it. Is that right?
Well, as I mentioned, it doesn't mean I'm not involved in these situations in any ways. So, right. But the growth in retail has been in the obvious places,
right.
and meanwhile, the older situations have, you know, without a dramatic change, we're talking about 20 years plus mm-hmm. of similar stagnation. Kohl's is the same thing, by the way, for all of these names. So why do we think it's going to get better now? You know, I just think that that's just foolish unless there is dramatic and meaningful change.
Jerry, thanks. Always great to get your take. Jerry Storch.
My pleasure.
Well, Morgan Stanley put together a list of potential targets, and on that list notably was Kohl's, as well as Under Armour, which I thought was sort of interesting.
Under Armour's, well, that is, Steve, I'm sure, has thoughts. I'll go back to Dillard's real quick. Again, throw up a chart. I mean, go over the three-, four-year chart in Dillard's, a $30 stock at the sort of the height of COVID, June of 2020-ish. I mean, look at the stock now. They just reported what was a good quarter, but year over year, earnings actually decreased earnings growth, yet valuation is still compelling, and they're sort of running laps around some of their competitors. So despite this move, if you go longer term, you see exactly what I'm looking at. I mean, this stock, there's certain stocks that, despite the moves, have still have value, and this is one of them.
All right, let's go back to the market rally. Major indices all closing well in the green, with the S&P posting its 18th record close of the year. All this ahead of tomorrow's Fed decision. Meantime, the yield on the 10-year softening, retreating from almost one-month highs. But the move in crude stoking some inflation fears. WTI now up nearly 17% this year. So how challenging is this backdrop for the Fed right now? What are we expecting, if anything, out of this meeting tomorrow?
So I think what the market has told us, that they're going to do nothing. What I think they're going to do is talk down or talk around tweaking QT, because you can't have QT if you're eventually setting the stage for a rate cut. You can't be letting stuff fall off your balance sheet at the same time, because one is dovish, one's hawkish. So you have to do something with QT before we even talk about rate cuts.
What do you think, Karen? It's going to change anything, you think?
I mean, I don't think they should do anything. I think inflation is heading the wrong way. And if we look at, you know, oil, we talk about that all the time. Oil going into, we're almost at the driving season. Oil was about $14 lower this time last year. That's a pretty big move. So I don't think they should do anything. But if they do, then they got to do the cut and talk really hawkish.
But it's become a real political, I mean, you saw the letter from Elizabeth Warren saying, you better cut rates because it's really hurting the alternative energy companies.
We mentioned it last night. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders saying, you got to cut rates, do it fast, which is, I mean, they're entitled to their opinion. It's the absolute wrong opinion, in my opinion. I think it'll hurt more people than it'll help. But again, politics gets in the way. With Karen's point, though, I mean, the two most important commodities out there, I think, are crude oil and copper. And then you throw gasoline somewhere as sort of underneath crude oil. Gasoline is up significantly, why these refiners are doing so well. And copper's breaking out right before our very eyes. So I don't know what would force the Fed to move in a meaningful way. And quite frankly, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Federal Reserve, but I think Jerome Powell's been pretty steadfast in his want to slay this inflation dragon.
Yeah, and I think if you want to think about it through a political lens, I don't think anyone's listening to Bernie and Warren right now. And I think the Biden administration realizes that they have, what, 7.5, 8 months until the election. And, you know, if they don't have inflation, at least the idea of it under control, I would suspect that they're not dying for what would be politicized rate cuts that would just juice the stock market or juice the economy if inflation were to become embedded, because that's the thing that they are getting very poor marks on right now as it relates to the economy. And we can all sit around here and say stock market's at high, housing's okay, unemployment's still below 4%, you know, all those sorts of things. I know that consumer credit's picking up and defaults are kind of ticking up a little bit, but that if that stuff starts to go the other way, that would be a real problem.
But you got to cut before that stuff goes the other way, or else they're going to be late. So that's the misconception I think the market has, is that we're waiting for unemployment to spike higher. We're waiting for defaults to spike higher. If we wait and we see that, they've waited and they're late. So that's the only reason why it might seem the wrong thing to do, but they have to do it to stay ahead of it.
All right. Coming up, we are checking in on NVIDIA after its big GTC conference, what CEO Jensen Huang had to say about all aspects of the company. More on the semi-trade next, plus builders bouncing back. Housing stocks in the green after strong housing data. Is the group building up a strong foundation? Don't go anywhere. Fast Money's back in two.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
You seek the key. But first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. NVIDIA shares erasing early losses and closing the day up a percent. The move coming after the chipmaker unveiled its latest AI platform, Blackwell, last night. CEO Jensen Huang sitting down with Jim Cramer this morning to talk about how the platform's integration with other companies puts NVIDIA everywhere.
The application software is being offered by Cadence and Synopsys and Ansys and Dassault, really amazing company that we work with, Dassault and Autodesk and Adobe and others. Our technology is integrated into theirs. Our technology is integrated into all these computer makers. And the world connects it together. And that's the reason why NVIDIA is everywhere.
You can catch more of that interview 6 p.m. Eastern time tonight on Mad Money. Elsewhere in the AI trade, Supermicro, those shares tumbling about 9% after the company filed to sell an additional 2 million shares using the proceeds to fund the purchase of inventory, expand manufacturing and research and development. The company actually was intending to do that pre-market today. It got delayed, which is sort of unusual. It aims to do it post-market. So there's some other little drama surrounding that share sale for Supermicro.
This is the second one, right, over the course of the last couple of weeks. Good for them, by the way. I mean, they should be doing exactly what they should be doing. And even with the move, I mean, it's not ridiculously expensive on valuation, but given the stock move, Karen says this all the time. I mean, you got to take advantage of it without question. NVIDIA price action today was very good. I mean, early on today, I mean, it was looking like it wanted to continue to break down from two Fridays again reversal. And the fact that it actually closed positive on a day is encouraging. You know, let's continue to see what happens over the next week or so. I still go back to that Friday of 2 weeks ago, the reversal, and say that might have been a top. But, I mean, you got to sort of, be your own guide at this point in this name.
Rosenblatt Securities' Hans Mosesmann says that they'll likely be sold out of the Blackwell chip through 2025 already, through next year.
Well, NVIDIA's everywhere, Mel. One of the things that's interesting is that, like, AMD had a bad day today. AMD is down 20% from those highs that it made just a couple of weeks ago on that big reversal day. And so it's interesting to me, you know, to see, you know, there's a lot of dispersion in the space right now. We saw Broadcom a couple weeks ago report the stock has barely seen an uptick. So it's interesting that the semi trade is now becoming increasingly concentrated around NVIDIA. And NVIDIA, no doubt about it, trades well. It is consolidating here in and around that $900 level. When it's down, people buy it. It seems like there's no bad headline for this stock. But I just say this, is like that guy walked out there for 2 hours, walked around a stage in front of 16,000 people that were gagging over every word of his. People, just come to your senses a little bit. I mean, like, this is a company that produces a product that you don't even touch. It's not even in your pocket, like an iPhone or anything like that. So the last time we've seen this sort of excitement was in and around Apple. And the only point I'm just making is, and you can say this, we're going to do this every night. You can say this, that, you know, it has gained $1 trillion in market cap this year, this quarter. It's anticipating Blackwell. It's anticipating being sold out for a year. All of this stuff. So that's it. Have fun with it.
But it still doesn't mean that it still doesn't mean it can't go further. I don't think that's what you're saying, right?
Well, it could go further.
Or the markets were flat-footed when it came to anticipating what AI should be and would become. And therefore, it should not have been at those. When you're saying it gained a trillion ago, maybe we should have started the climb earlier.
I sort of think there's something else going on today, which is him talking about we're everywhere, right? So he's partnering up with everyone. Right? So if he captures all of them, you have nowhere else to go.
Right.
And that's the part to me that's really interesting. It's and AI, of course, we're in, I don't know what inning, not the first anymore, but early. And if he's going to be, you know, just sort of marking his spots everywhere and everybody's got to go to him, that's a whole other thing. That's kind of fascinating.
And the other thing he said today in Jim Cramer's interview is everything we do starts with software. He really went out trying to sell the notion that it is a platform.
Right.
If they are making these partnerships, it's harder to switch. You're in that system. Developers are building on that. And then, you know, you go out a year and where's AMD left in that? That's the concern.
And they have to Karen's post. So we've been talking about this. They're 85% market share in this space. And if there's logjam, supply demand logjams here, they're going to remain in that seat. And when you talk about valuation, if you look at it on a forward PE, NVIDIA trades less expensive than Microsoft. less expensive than Amazon on a forward. Don't look at the PE now. NVIDIA forward PE is 36 times.
Even among chips, it's not the top five.
Exactly.
Valuation in the semiconductor.
It means it has a tremendous amount of runway before this gets crazy.
Are we back to where it was Intel? They had all the market share, except you had to have at least one other supplier so you didn't get caught with nothing, right? If something happened with your Intel relationship. Is that where we are right now? NVIDIA. And then
there's AMD. And maybe Intel to some degree.
Intel yeah. hopes, yep.
Yeah, there's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
There's no place like home, and builders are putting hammer to nail as the housing market looks to recover. The data sending those stocks higher. Next. Plus, and speaking of real estate, why our next guest says commercial property is still looking for a bottom. The signs coming out of the credit market. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got a news alert on a Canadian national allegedly stealing, or selling, I should say, trade secrets to China about an American company. Eamon Jivers has got the details. Eamon.
Melissa, this just coming in from a press release from the Department of Justice. They say a Canadian national was arrested earlier today in Nassau County, New York, and that this Canadian national was attempting to sell electric vehicle battery trade secrets to undercover officers. The person involved here allegedly believed that those undercover officers were legitimate business people he could sell these secrets to. Now, it looks as if from the context here that the company involved as the victim of all of this was, in fact, Tesla, given the description of the situation that the Department of Justice lays out in this press release. They are saying that a man named Klaus Fugelbiel, 58, a Canadian national and resident of the People's Republic of China, was arrested for conspiring with co-defendant Yilong Shao of Ningbao, China, to send to undercover law enforcement officers trade secrets that belong to a leading U.S.-based electric vehicle company. They only identify here as victim company number one. But again, from the circumstances here laid out in the document, it does appear that this may be Tesla that was involved in this transaction. Mm-hmm. And Melissa, the interesting thing here is that this person was employed by a company allegedly that was sold to Tesla back in 2019 and has been living in China since then. So it's not clear exactly how much damage was done to Tesla by these trade secrets walking out the door of that company. But the individual has been living in China for quite a long time, was arrested in Long Island today. Back over to you.
All right, Eamon, thank you. Eamon Jivers. Meanwhile, home builders getting a boost today. Taylor Morrison, D.R. Horton, NVR, all up more than 2%, with names like Lennar and KB Home solidly in the green. This after some housing data for February came in better than expected. Housing starts up 1.52 million compared to a forecast of 1.43 million. Building permits also beating estimates, reaching their highest level since August. Now, part of it is seasonality. The weather was a lot better in the past month, but still very strong showings.
Without question. Supply. I mean, we've talked about this now for the last 2 years. Interest rates, I get it. It's important. Not nearly as important as supply-demand imbalances, which still haven't gone away, which obviously work for these home builders. Here's the, in my opinion, the only, well, one of the main risks, the unemployment rate. And we saw it move from 3.7 to 3.9. If that continues on that trajectory, which, by the way, I think it will, I think home builder trade might get a little extended. If you believe that unemployment is going to stay at current levels, then you can make a very compelling case that these stocks are still a buy at these levels.
How about home retail, a little bit more insulated in your view, Karen? A Home Depot, a Lowe's, for instance?
I own them both. Mm-hmm. I do think, I mean, maybe that's part of this retail thing as well. Yeah. I always wonder, though, what would happen to these home builders if we saw a series of interest rate cuts? You know, the knee jerk would be, oh, up. But at some point, you unleash all of this existing home, existing home inventory that hasn't been on the market. I don't know where that, we're far from that,
right.
But I just think it would be an interesting dynamic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think D.R. Horton, the last time I was on, that D.R. Horton has been underperforming the space, and they are a spec builder. So if you start to see rates even have a glimpse of starting to come in, people are willing to lift the leg and say, I could always refinance. But the mortgage rates have to be going in the right direction in order for them to lock up a mortgage that's much higher than they want to ultimately have. So DHI has been a name that I think could catch up once we start to actually see rates start to begin to fall.
All right. Coming up, is the bottom in for commercial real estate? Our next guest isn't convinced. The signs he is seeing in the credit market that could be pointing to more pain ahead. Fortress Investment Group co-CEO Drew McKnight joins us on that, plus how problems for the banks could just be getting started. Fast Money's back in two.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks closing in the green today after a rough start to trading. The S&P 500 notching a record close. The Dow jumping more than 300 points and the Nasdaq up about 0.4%. Shares of International Paper jumping nearly 11% today and leading the S&P 500 its best day in more than 4 years as the company names a new CEO. Shares of Pinduoduo lower today after reports the company shopping app Temu is looking to reduce its reliance on the U.S. market as lawmakers in Washington continue to increase pressure on Chinese companies. Daniel brought this up before because there was a report saying that because they spent so much to get into the U.S., that was actually benefiting Google and Meta. I would think the reverse could be true, then it would hurt Google and Meta.
Yeah, and obviously this plays in that whole kind of tit for tat that's going on with TikTok, too. It's just kind of like how we kind of treat their companies who are trying to be here. It's been a huge boon, I think, for Google and Meta, but let's see if that happens, especially if they de-emphasize this. The other thing is they're losing a lot of money being here, and so, you know, again, they're going to likely shift that if the political winds change a little
bit.
You
think they lose a lot of money when they send me a $4.99 kids bathing suit?
I think so.
In a package from China? How do you think about it in terms of the impact on retail?
I think
even at the margins.
Well, that it's good for you think about who has really been hurt. And so it's Inditex or H&M. They've really been hurt. Etsy was actually up a bunch this morning on that. It ended up not down, not up very much at all. But I didn't think originally of your take on it. Well, that advertising dollars that, well, after that huge Super Bowl. Spend like
shop a billionaire. Like a billionaire.
Shop like a billionaire. Yeah. All billionaires buy $4.99 kids bathing suits from China.
Yeah. You look at, I mean, there are now two people on this desk that can probably know what that feels like. And one of them is our next guest. The other one is Karen Feinerman.
Oh, shop like a billionaire.
Exactly.
Yeah, all right. Nearly $1 trillion in commercial real estate loans are set to mature this year, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. That's an increase of almost 30% from a year ago, and that might be just one of the concerns looming over the credit market. Fortress Investment Group co-CEO and managing partner of Credit Funds, Drew McKnight, joins us here on set. Welcome to our set here in New York City.
Thanks for having me.
The last time we saw Drew was in Miami. So what you think we're at the top of the first inning when it comes to the problems we're going to face in commercial real estate? I mean, how does this sort of unfold? Is it like a rolling default? Is it a crisis situation? How do you see that?
I do. I think it's top of the first inning. I think if you look at the number of defaults to date, it's very, very low. Why is that? It's a host of reasons. They've been able to extend the maturities. But if you really think about it, there's capital structures that are upside down. It's not just in office, it's also in multifamily. And so as you think about this opportunity and what's going to have to happen, real estate was the biggest beneficiary of low rates, right? That was the prime beneficiary. And unless rates can reset and reset quickly, I just don't see an easy solution. You know, how does that play out? If you take a step back and think about the crisis, in the RTC crisis in the late 80s, early 90s, I think there were 700 financial institutions that failed. In the global financial crisis, I think there were 400 banks that failed. We've had five so far. I'm not saying we're going to have that deep of a recession, but you know, if you think about RTC, it was very centralized to real estate. Our own view is the economy might be able to hold up okay, even if we have this real estate reset. But for folks that own real estate levered, it could be very painful.
Drew, it's interesting. You know, one of your peers, John Gray, he's the president of Blackstone last week. I think he said to Bloomberg that real estate prices have bottomed. And if you move fast, you can buy assets at cheap prices. That seems to be very contradictory to what you're kind of saying. You just said you think we're kind of in the first inning of a reset here.
I've heard of John Gray. Yeah. He's a great real estate investor. Yeah. I think they have a very large and long time horizon. And so I think in the context of trying to put $100 billion to work, maybe you need to get really aggressive right now. I think in the context of trying to pick a bottom, I think it's really, really early. And I think we've got a lot of time. I think prices will go lower for real estate, I think almost across the board. And if you think about what's going to, how are interest rates going to go lower, because I think that will be part of what has to happen in order for real estate to reset. The only way interest rates are going to go lower is if the economy really slows down and if the Fed can actually start to cut, which, again, if you look at what's going on, and BOJ just hiked today for the first time, I think, in 17 years, I think we're actually far away from them really being able to cut meaningfully.
Do you think we're going to see some sort of tipping point event, like a couple of big asset sales that force everyone to mark their books lower, which then triggers all kinds of more collateral or whatever it might be, where a liquidity crunch really quickly follows?
I think it's hard to know. I think if you look back at what happened last year with Silicon Valley Bank and some of the crises we had last year, that was really centralized on a handful of banks that had very specific asset liability mismatch, and we still had a deposit flight that was massive and put the whole banking sector at risk. I think with real estate, you know, virtually every bank has exposure. And to your point, if you think back to the global financial crisis, it didn't matter which bank was transacting. If any bank transacted at any price, everyone went through every bank's balance sheet and marked them to market. If loans traded at 70 cents, every bank's balance sheet's marked at 70 cents. Now, I don't think that's correct. But if we do enter that stage of this sort of crisis, I think you could have that.
Drew, what will be the warning signs for the audience? Is it small and regional banks rolling over again? Is it something in the HYG, the high yield credit ETF? What should we be looking for to sort of be a warning for what you're talking about?
I think what will be the trigger will start to be the actual transactions. I think you'll see asset sales occur. I think right now there are banks that do want to delever, that want to sell assets. They need to raise equity or raise reserves in order to do that. To Steve and I were talking to the healthy banks. I think they're going to be able to take the reserves. They've got the earnings. This is a good environment. They'll be able to take the reserves. And I believe the strong will get stronger. And I think the smaller banks that aren't positioned will either have to get bought or get liquidated.
In the meantime, you've acquired performing loans, office loans specifically, at just cents on the dollar, right? 50, 69 cents on the dollar. So where else are you seeing these opportunities right now, especially as, you know, since we're in the early innings and you're still expecting rough times ahead, you're still out there buying assets?
Well, again, I do think one of the things that John Gray said was you need to be buying as things are bottoming. And so, you know, if you can buy loans at a healthy enough discount, you're getting coupons along the way, you have the ability and some downside protection. We're also very active in forward flows with mortgage origination and consumer finance. And I think real estate equity will also be a big opportunity. I just think it's going to be a long road ahead.
All right, Drew, great to have you with us. Hope to see you soon. Drew McKnight.
Thanks so much.
All right. What are you looking for?
Well, that's why I asked the question. I mean, if there is a credit event or in this world, well, let's back up for a second. A name like Simon Properties, SPG, stocks rallied 52% since the October low, which sort of makes sense. In the absence of bad news, people are going to sort of flock to these names. But if you're in the Drew McKnight camp and think there's, you know, something's going to happen along the way, and we are in the early innings, these things should start to roll over. But the thing that I will continue to look at is the HYG, the high yield credit ETF, which basically doesn't move until it does. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a warning sign.
One thing I think Drew said that I really agree with is problem for regionals, not a problem, maybe an opportunity
for bigger.
Mm-hmm. Position that way. Long JP Morgan, short carry. But I am long NYCB. On the hope that the Mnuchin Group, yes.
Yeah. Coming up, Bitcoin's bad week. The crypto dropping below 63,000 at one point today, more than $10,000 lower than the all-time high hit just last week. Is the crypto bull run already over? We'll debate that next. Plus, survey says we will reveal the results of Investopedia's latest investor poll with editor-in-chief Caleb Silver. Why high rates might be the least of their worries right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Bitcoin slipping further from its record run last week, the cryptocurrency falling below 63,000 at one point today. That's a steep drop from last week's record high of over 73,000. The rest of the crypto space falling in sympathy, MicroStrategy, Coinbase, and more, all seeing significant drops today. JP Morgan's Marko Kalanovic warning that MicroStrategy's Bitcoin purchases could make Bitcoin's fall even worse. The company has bought nearly $1.5 billion in Bitcoin over the last 2 weeks alone. Steve, you're in Ethereum.
I'm in Ethereum. I'm in iBit, one of the ETFs for Bitcoin. And if you have 11 ETFs, there's going to be a lot more people to sort of catch these moves. But these moves are extremely volatile. Look at the long-term chart on Bitcoin. It's not immune to the ups and downs. I do believe now you have a host of people and funds that are able to buy it. So the low, and you can't prove or disprove the counterfactual, but I think that ultimately it should trade in a lot tighter channel than it used to. And ultimately, with that many more people that are buying it, I think it's going higher. I've been buying on dips.
So I was sort of wondering, all right, is it this idea maybe the Fed's going to be a little more disciplined and that's going to be, you know, one of the underpinnings is Fed going nuts. But you would think gold would then, gold has not kept up to the downside, better for you gold bugs, significantly underperforming gold. So
it's interesting. Drew mentioned Bank of Japan, first time in 17 years. I think that's part of it as well. Karen hit the nail on the head. You know, I think if this is a Fed that's going to continue, at least if they're going to sound hawkish, I think that actually is counter to what the Bitcoin people want them to do. And so this move, to me, it makes sense at least.
You know, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned gold and what it's been doing. I mean, gold gained, like, what, $1.4 trillion in market cap in the last month. And Bitcoin, which is up 50% in that same period. So gold's up 10%. Bitcoin's up 50%. It's gained half that in market cap. So there's still a bid for gold, which is pretty interesting.
Coming up, optimistic investing, why retail traders are seeing markets as a glass half full and where they're putting their money to work right now. Details when Fast Money returns. News alert here on Chipotle. The stock's going to split. Bertha Coombs got the details. Bertha.
Yeah, Melissa, the first in its history, Chipotle's board approving a 50-for-1 stock split. You can see the stock there trading just about at $2,800. It would become effective on the close of June 25th. You would need to buy the stock by June 18th in order to qualify, and it would begin trading on a post-split basis on Wednesday, June 26th. This would also, imagine, help them be included in more indexes, I would imagine, if you bring that price down. Melissa?
Yep. The Dow seems a little bit more likely with the split. Bertha, thank you. Bertha Coombs. And, of course, we're going to see the stock pop because that makes no sense at all. But that's what happens, right? That's what happens.
Mathematically, it makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
But it's for other reasons, as Bertha said, it makes sense. It's a lot of beans, by the way.
Right. Which you don't want.
No.
Even with the big run in stocks this year, individual investors are still optimistic on the market. That's according to the latest survey from Investopedia. Editor-in-chief Caleb Silver is here on set to dive into the results and reveal a new emoji heat map. This was a good one because it really shows how investors feel right now about the markets. And that is what, Caleb?
Yeah, sometimes that knee-jerk reaction is the one you want. And cue Joe Cocker, because they're feeling all right. Mm. More are cautiously optimistic, about 49%, 16%, 17% say they're optimistic. That's two-thirds saying they are optimistic in some way. And a lot of them are expecting higher returns over the next 6 months, despite the fact that we've had 18 all-time highs already this year. A lot of pressure in different parts of the market right now. But they're feeling really good, and they're ready to buy more.
Yeah, a lot of them, most of them, have money in money markets, though. Do they intend on moving? If they're feeling so good, why not put in at equities at this point?
Yeah, we asked that question, and about 60% of our respondents say they have money market funds, and half of them said they're ready to start moving that into stocks. All that sideline money that everybody's been talking about, the $6.x trillion, well, some of it may move, and that may come from retail investors, which could keep us at higher highs. We'll see.
Yeah, the bubble is where Dan thinks there's a bubble. AI. Well, right.
AI-related stocks, crypto, mega-cap tech, housing and real estate, and internet and communication stocks. But guess what? They hold a lot of these in their portfolios and would buy more if they had more money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what about crypto, too? Again, because, like, you guys do a breakout on that. And do people, you guys have millions and millions of viewers who go to your site every month. So talk to us about what we're seeing month over month. Steve was just talking about these spot ETFs and Bitcoin.
Crypto was kryptonite as of pretty much last year up until about this year when the spot ETFs came and we saw the big price spike. And now about 1 in 10 are actually interested, Bitcoin curious. Some of them hold it already, but now we have more people actually more interested in it, probably because of those spot Bitcoin ETFs. But the price, that rings bells in people's ears, and they want to be a part of it.
And they're worried about the presidential elections and inflation, so all of the stuff that we are all worried about. Caleb, great to see you. Thank you. Caleb Silver, Investopedia, up next, Final Trades. Final trade time, Steve.
IoT, it's Samsara, comes out, ticker symbols, Internet of Things. I just bought it today.
Karen?
Yes, I am staying short KRE, which I put on against NYCB.
Dan?
What about the Z and Zebra? That'd be Zoom. It's hanging in there, okay?
Guys.
I love Caleb. I do.
Yes.
He's great. And you guys are like, go back decades.
He was a baby field producer and I was a baby reporter.
Now look, you're all grown up.
We're all grown up.
Nice.
The NASDAQ on the secondary offering, you buy the weakness.
All right. Thanks for watching Fast. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.